The headlines this hour. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi is paying an official visit to Syria, the first by an Iranian president since the foreign-backed militancy gripped their country in 2011. The Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza says one person was killed and five others injured in Israeli airstrikes in the besieged Gaza Strip before truce. And Russia says it has arrested seven Ukrainian agents planning sabotage attacks in Crimea.
Welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us.
The Syrian president has met with Ebrahim Raisi, who is the first Iranian president to pay an official visit to the war-torn Arab country in more than a decade. During the meeting, Raisi hailed the strength and resistance of the Syrian nation for overcoming various problems over the past years. He said that Syria has emerged victorious in its fight against those challenges, despite Western sanctions and external pressure. The Syrian president, for his part, appreciated the fruitful and solid ties between Tehran and Damascus. Bashar al-Assad said that the two countries were able to maintain their partnership regardless of political and security issues. Before his departure to Syria, Iran's president also talked about hardships the Syrian people have encountered with and hailed their resistance.
Terror groups like Daesh, which were created by the U.S., did their utmost to cause chaos in the region through bloodshed and murder. Daesh and Takfiri groups committed many massacres and crimes. But the people of Syria, resistance groups in the region, President Assad himself, and his government showed great strength and stood against attacks and acts of aggression.
Raisi added that Syria's sovereignty and territorial integrity must be respected and that the Syrian government must have control over every inch of the country's soil. Iran has given its unwavering support for Syria since the beginning of the war there. It has also sent military advisors to the Arab nation at the request of its government. Tehran has also expressed its readiness to help with rebuilding efforts in Syria. Let's bring in Masoud Shajara, who is the chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, joining us from London. Masoud Shajara, welcome. So finally, we have the Iranian president to have visited this country, of which it was a victim of the terrorism that was exercised against it. And it comes at a time when Syria is being welcomed back into the fold, so this kind of gives the final stamp of approval for it to, in some sense, recalibrate what's called the axis of resistance. What is your reading into this visit?
Well, it's very significant. As you said, really, this is established the sort of the victory for Syria, because Syria was becoming a victim of the plot or a project of the West, which was unleashed in Iraq, it was unleashed in Libya and elsewhere, that bring chaos and destruction to nations in the region. And the West wasn't able to implement fully what they unleashed in Syria because of the support of Iran and indeed Russia and others. And the fact that now it's been totally established, as you said, Syria is being recognized yet again as a player in the region, and recognition by all the other regional countries, it's actually a victory for common sense, victory for preservation of Syria as an independent state, and victory for the region.
Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi, heading this 13th administration, has made it a point to re-enhance and recalibrate its relationship with regional countries. Of course, at the top of the list, we can mention Saudi Arabia. So when you have all the countries in the region at this point to have, in a sense, embraced Syria, then you have for example, the U.S. That has the Caesars Act, which is one of the most devastating sanctions against this country, or you have its legal presence accompanying that. And you also have Israel that's bombing Syria. These don't go together with what's happening regionally. What can be done in order to stop those really destructive efforts?
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, on one side, Syria is now recognized by all the regional countries and being embraced and welcomed back, which shows the defeat of the U.S. and the Zionist state's program of death, destruction, and chaos. But unfortunately, they're still following those projects by bombing and illegal occupation. But I think we need to probably concentrate today on the victory of the sort of plan and the project of Iran in bringing all the regions together and saying that the security for region, it could be only realized when everyone works together and they actually own up the responsibility to make the region secure. And I think that policy is now very clearly victorious, while the policy of the West and Zionist state is defeated.
So do you think there's a chance, and finally, my final question, that given this vantage point, from this vantage point that we just talked about, that maybe by some miracle, an international body like the UN can realize, you know, the U.S. presence in Syria is illegal to begin with, and it's adding to regional instability, including its major ally, obviously, Israel, and perhaps for there something to be done, perhaps?
Well, I think they realize it. I think there's no one who doesn't realize this reality. But are they going to do anything about it? And I think the fact of the matter is that the both U.S. and Israeli state are on downfall. We are seeing the beginning of the end of their power. And this is why they are very dangerous at this moment in time. But I think it's only the future would show, and I'm sure we are seeing the beginning of the defeat of their mischief in the area.
Thank you very much, Master Shajar, Chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, live there from London. Thank you. Now we can listen to activist and political analyst John Busnich, who joined us earlier from Belgrade with his take on the Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi's visit to Syria.
Well, a presidential visit is actually always the most important level contact that there can be in diplomacy. And so this is not just a working visit, but it's a political sign of solidarity with Syria at a time when Syria has managed to stabilize the crisis that America promoted in the region with the support of Israel. This is a very important visit. Obviously, this is a very good opportunity for both countries to build new markets because the trade level between the two countries has been hampered by the instability in Iraq and the ongoing destabilization of Syria itself by the American military presence. If Iran and Syria can make a serious initiative to raise trade ties, this can make a major difference to both countries because it will increase their international networking with others, friendly countries like Russia and China. So trade is the essential next step to developing a bigger infrastructure of support between the two countries.
Pro-Israel lobby groups are pushing to muzzle Press TV by cracking down its social media presence. U.S.-based organizations, the Center for Countering Digital Hate and the Anti-Defamation League, released a new report accusing Press TV of, quote, spreading dangerous anti-Semitism. The claims have been immediately seized upon by the pro-Israel lobby in the UK, with a call to social media companies to restrict the channel further. Amina Taylor has more from the British capital.
It has become a well-trodden political path, Press TV being attacked in the British Parliament. This time the mouthpiece was the vice chair of the Conservatives' Friends of Israel.
A shocking report into the online activities of Press TV, particularly their use of a video series called Palestine Declassified, which focuses its hatred on British Jews. Whilst Press TV may be banned from our airways, this foreign state hate operation is continuing online. Can we have a debate at some point on what more we can do to ensure that social media platforms tackle this outrageous content?
In the decade and a half since it was established, Press TV has found itself front and center of Western media attacks. But despite the pressure, the channel continues to advocate for the voiceless, chief amongst them, the Palestinians. The show at the heart of the latest onslaught is Palestine Declassified. Its host, former Labour MP Chris Williamson, gave his take on why the show was such a bone of contention for the pro-Israel lobby.
What we've seen here is a shameless attempt by the Israel lobby in the House of Parliament to whitewash Israel's criminality and lawlessness. And of course, they're very concerned about the fact that Palestine Declassified is shining a light into the murky corners of Israel's activities and indeed on the lobby that seeks to avoid any criticism of their suppression of the Palestinian people. Palestine Declassified is, you know, very effective. It scrupulously researches all of the content that we put out. And obviously, you know, they're embarrassed by the truth that we are bringing to a wider public. And of course, you know, the traction that Palestine Declassified is now picking up, it's been suggested, reaching well over 11 million people now. So they're doing their damnedest now, it seems to me, to try and close down our success.
Chris has written a stern letter rebuking some of the smears parroted by Andrew Percy.
There's no truth whatsoever to the allegations that you made. I mean, they suggested that, you know, we sort of are a vehicle for hatred towards British Jews. I mean, the programme is doesn't sort of promote hate in any respect, or suggested anyway, that he should consider apologising for maligning me and for impugning the reputation of Palestine Declassified and Press TV.
As Palestinians continue to live under an oppressive regime, Press TV's fight to advocate for justice will see it targeted as part of Israel's campaign to close down anyone who stands up for the Palestinian cause, a move branded media terrorism. Amina Taylor, London.
Palestinian inmate Sheikh Khadr Adnan has been martyred in an Israeli jail after nearly 3 months of a hunger strike over his illegal detention. Adnan was found unconscious in his cell on Tuesday morning. He went on a hunger strike on February the 5th. An Israeli court rejected another plea to release him on bail despite warnings about his health condition. The 45-year-old Palestinian was a senior member of the Islamic Jihad resistance movement in the occupied West Bank. His body has been taken to an Israeli hospital. The International Committee of the Red Cross is calling on Israel to release his body.
We offer our sincere condolences to the family and loved ones of Khadr Adnan at this difficult time. We call on the Israeli authorities to release Mr. Adnan's body so his family can mourn and arrange a dignified burial according to their customs and beliefs.
Adnan is the 206th Palestinian deliberately murdered in Israeli detention centers. He was one of nearly 5,000 Palestinians held in the regime's jails. Many are incarcerated under the so-called administrative detention mechanism, which is used to keep Palestinians behind bars indefinitely without charge or trial.
It was his sixth hunger strike and the longest, which lasted for 87 consecutive days. Palestinian prisoner Sheikh Khadr Adnan stubbornly resisted until his last breath, asking for his release he always obtained after every hunger strike against his illegal administrative detention by the Israeli authorities. This time, however, his hunger strike ended with his martyrdom in a cold cell in the Israeli prison of Ramli at dawn on Tuesday. Here in his hometown, Arabi, near the occupied Jenin, his wife spoke to the crowd who gathered outside their home to consolidate the family and his 9 children. They called for his revenge and also for all Palestinian prisoners languishing in Israeli jails.
I congratulate myself and my children for the martyrdom of Sheikh Khadr. Now, after his death and all the sacrifices he made, we do not want a drop of his blood to be spilled. We will not wait for anyone to avenge my husband. His 9 children will keep his cause alive. And to the Israeli occupation, I say, remember the faces of my children well. By God, we have raised them with pride and dignity.
A general strike has been announced across the occupied West Bank in mourning for Sheikh Khadr Adnan. Protests have been held in several areas, including Ramallah. Palestinian resistance groups have mourned what they described as the execution of the senior leader of the Islamic Jihad resistance movement, Khadr Adnan. They say they hold the Israeli occupying regime fully responsible for Adnan's murder. Since 2004, Adnan had gone on 6 hunger strikes, drawing local and international attention. Not only did he become a spokesperson for the Islamic Jihad, but also a symbol for the cause of Palestinian prisoners.
The Israeli regime has sent a clear message to the whole world that we will continue killing Palestinians even after their imprisonment. Today, Sheikh Khader Adnan has set a new level full of pride in the history of Palestinian prisoner movement. After his assassination, the Palestinian people are facing a new stage of struggle. Today, we all must unite and stand against the practices of the Israeli regime for the sake of our prisoners.
All Palestine is sad for the martyrdom of the hero prisoner Sheikh Khader Adnan. It was not his first hunger strike. Every time he was courageously declaring a hunger strike to reject the illegal administrative detention that the occupation's regime uses to keep thousands of our people behind bars. Unfortunately, this time his strike came to an end with his martyrdom.
Meanwhile, several protests have been held in the occupied Ramallah in response to the Israeli murder of Sheikh Khader Adnan. The demonstrations turned violent in a number of areas, namely the cities of Ar-Ram, Al-Khalil, and Ramallah, with clashes erupting between Israeli soldiers and Palestinian protesters. Israeli forces fired at the crowds, and a number of Palestinians were wounded. The Day of Rage will always be remembered as a day of honor and loyalty to Sheikh Khader Adnan, who is considered by many here as a national hero.
Every time Sheikh Khader Adnan engaged in a hunger strike, he insisted that he will not end his action without achieving victory. His definition of victory was either getting released or being martyred. This time he achieved victory by martyrdom. Palestinians also believe he was an iconic figure who succeeded in bringing another defeat to the Israeli regime. Mona Qandil, occupied Ramallah.
The health ministry in the Gaza Strip says one Palestinian was killed and five others injured in Israeli airstrikes before a ceasefire reached between the regime and resistance groups. The ministry said a 58-year-old Gazan died after Israel carried out aerial strikes, hitting several areas, including Hamas positions in the besieged territory. Dozens of rockets were also fired toward Israel from Gaza in retaliation for the martyrdom of Palestinian prisoner Khader Adnan in an Israeli jail. Adnan went on a hunger strike to protest his detention without any charge or trial. Meanwhile, the Islamic Jihad resistance movement said the attacks from Israel and Gaza have ended as the truce is being enforced. Egypt, Qatar, and the UN helped secure what Palestinian sources said a reciprocal and simultaneous ceasefire. Earlier, the Israeli military confirmed three injuries in rockets fired from Gaza. Russia says it has arrested seven people working for Ukrainian intelligence in the Crimean port city of Sevastopol. In a statement, Russia's Federal Security Service said the detainees were planning attacks in the Black Sea region. The statement also said that attacks against Russian-installed governor and other officials there were thwarted. The revelation came as a massive fire engulfs another fuel depot near a bridge linking Russia's mainland with Crimea. Reports say the blaze was caused as a result of a drone falling on the facility. Last week, a similar fire broke out at an oil reservoir in Sevastopol, which Russian officials blamed on Ukraine. Several Crimean cities have been hit by drones since Russia launched its military offensive against Ukraine. Crimea was reintegrated into the Russian Federation following a referendum in 2014.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of a speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution in a meeting with a number of poets and experts in Persian literature in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya on Wednesday, April 5, 2023. The meeting took place on the eve of the auspicious birth anniversary of Imam Hassan alayhi salam. Here, in the streets of Tehran, our most virtuous youth, like the ones whose names were mentioned, such as Arman Ali Verdi and Ruhollah Ajamian, they were truly some of our purest, most untainted, most virtuous youth, were tortured to death. But the Western world did not object at all. I mean, it didn't matter to them. Rather, they provoked people and trained them to do these things. Their radio stations and their agents teach these kinds of things. These are examples of their human rights. All of us must know the enemy today. Everyone should know the points the enemy uses as targets for its attacks. Everyone should know the strategies employed by the enemies. Everyone should know where the enemy is positioned. Just like in a military warfare is the same. If you don't know where the enemy is going to attack from, you will be deceived. If you don't know which area they plan on occupying and if they succeed in tricking you, you will be deceived. You need to know these things. It is the same in soft warfare.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
You must know what the enemy wants to do, where their target is, what their goals are, and what their strategies are. Everyone should know these and fight against these, especially the artistic and cultural circles. Poets, artists, novelists, cinematographers, architects, and those involved in various cultural fields should know that we are currently facing this plundering and onslaught of the enemy. They should pay attention to this. They need to understand what is happening. And they must also show what's happening to other people. They need to raise awareness about this, and they shouldn't be passive. Fortunately, we have a number of good poets today who are pious, kind-hearted, and believers in the religion and the revolution. Well, you are all examples of this. Fortunately, one of the good things that has been done by various organizations, those that are active in the field of art and also other organizations, is that they have helped to expand this kind of work throughout the country. Today, the opportunity exists for poets from all over the country, even those from villages and small towns, to introduce themselves and to go to centers where they can present their poetry.
Allah, I want to thank you. That you've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done. For me
the wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Canada and one of the largest industrial actions in the country's history. Some 155,000 public workers are on strike in a dispute with the government over pay. While wages are a primary sticking point, the unions also want remote work included in their collective agreement. Cleaners and cooks, clerks and maintenance workers, tradespeople, Coast Guard search and rescue teams, teachers, firefighters, and workers who process employment insurance, passport applications, and immigration documents have now walked out of their jobs.
And I can tell you that we do not have a tentative agreement. The Public Service Alliance of Canada, 155,000 members, will be on strike as of 12:01 a.m. We will remain at the table. We will remain for as long as it takes during the strike. And we will remain on strike until the government addresses our key issues.
The strike has already disrupted public services in various sectors. Lawyers say the strike has affected everyone from refugee claimants whose hearings are cancelled to sponsored relatives stuck in limbo and from migrant workers to foreign students. The workers' union have failed to reach an agreement with the federal government in an effort to bring the industrial action to an end. On Saturday, the Canadian government negotiators presented the striking public workers with what they called a final offer. The Treasury Board, which oversees public administration, said details are being kept to the negotiating table, but the proposal included an enhanced wage offer and addressed issues including telework, seniority, and contracting. In a statement, the Treasury Board called the offer fair, competitive, and reasonable. The offer, however, has so far failed to bring the strikes to a halt. The workers are escalating their strike action in a bid to block several Canadian ports to pressure the government to get their demands met, including raising wages in line with the cost of living crisis and the soaring inflation. This is while inflation in Canada rose to a peak of more than 8% last June. It is expected to remain above 3% until the fourth quarter of this year. The strikes in Canada come as the country is gripped with an unfathomable economic crisis that includes soaring food insecurity. A chief executive of one of the country's leading food banks, the Daily Bread, said hundreds of thousands of people stream in each month to get food.
We are absolutely in a food crisis in the country and certainly in the city of Toronto. Before the pandemic, we saw about 60,000 clients saying, "I'm food insecure." And that number this past March is 270,000. It has escalated by four times, and in a country as wonderful as Canada is, it just shouldn't be that way.
Hetherington said of the newcomers to the 128 food banks across the Toronto area affiliated with the Daily Bread, many have full-time jobs but still can't make ends meet. Visitors to food banks in other parts of Canada also echo a sense of despair and need with long queues to get something to eat at food banks. Hetherington said accommodations, both rentals and homes for sales, are out of reach for many Canadians across the country. This comes at a time when a lengthy period of higher rates could force an increasing share of highly indebted Canadians to reset their mortgages at levels that squeeze their finances. But regardless of all the economic hardships the Canadian people are going through, the government of Prime Minister Justin Trudeau spent 1.32% of its GDP on defense in the fiscal year of 2021-2022. Canadian authorities also continue with their pledge to provide Ukraine with military support in its war with Russia. After all, Canada has been one of the most vocal supporters of Ukraine and has provided billions of dollars in financial and military assistance to Kyiv since January 2022. Apart from that, Canada is the sixth largest contributor to NATO's common funded budget by allocating 13.7% of defense spending on major equipment in 2021 and 2022. Canadian authorities claim that the assistance is for Ukraine in what they call its fight for democracy. They, however, know perfectly well that they are using billions of dollars of the Canadian taxpayers' money to inject into a war which does not serve Canada at all and only favors the expansionist policy of the United States. Instead, if this money is allocated to address Canada's internal economic concerns, what else can force more than 150,000 Canadians to walk out of their jobs and call for better pays, which would subsequently disrupt all public services and make public and private sectors dysfunctional? On her first official visit to the Islamic Republic since taking office, Iraqi President Abdel Latif Rashid has visited Tehran to hold talks with Iranian high-ranking authorities. Upon arrival, the Iraqi leader met with President Ebrahim Raisi at the Saadabad complex, where he received an official welcome by the Iranian top executive official. The two sides then held a joint press conference, with boosting bilateral relations between Tehran and Baghdad being the focus of their remarks.
With regards to political, trade and economic issues, as well as the cultural domain, we have so far had good relations in those areas, and both countries are set to further expand their mutual relations.
So it's clear and is a reality that relations between Iran and Iraq are constant and solid and unchangeable.
But enhancing trade relations and economic development was not the only issue discussed between the two presidents. President Raisi and the Iraqi leader also addressed issues concerning regional security.
A security agreement was reached between the two countries, and the slightest insecurity anywhere in Iraq is regarded as insecurity for Iran. So the security of Iraq is very important for us. The security of borders is important to us, and the security arrangements between the two countries can lead not only to the security of both countries, but the security of the whole region.
For his part, the Iraqi leader praised the role of Tehran in providing assistance to the Iraqi people during the rule of former dictator Saddam Hussein and at a time when the Arab country was gripped with foreign-backed terrorism by the Daesh terror group. The presence of foreign forces was also among issues discussed by the two presidents. President Raisi said, "As much as we consider useful the negotiations between the regional countries, we do not consider the presence of foreign forces in the region to be useful, and we regard the presence of Americans as a threat to the security of the region." Raisi said Iran's ties with Iraq and other countries of the region are based on common interests, but Americans only think of their own interests. Later on Saturday, the Iraqi president also met with the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. During the meeting, the leader called on Baghdad to get U.S. troops out of the Arab country, saying even one American soldier on the Iraqi soil is too many. Ayatollah Khamenei said the U.S. is not a friend of Iraq, adding that Washington is not even loyal to its European allies. The visit by the Iraqi leader to Tehran is of very high significance, both concerning Iraq's internal problems and regional and international issues. At a national level, the visit comes at a time when, according to Iran's president, the level of commercial and economic ties between the two countries exceed $10 billion. Not to mention that this figure can upgrade to a much higher level. According to President Raisi, relations between the two countries continue in various fields, including infrastructure, water, electricity, gas, and energy. These are the sectors that Iraq has been suffering the most from during the past couple of decades or so. That especially comes to the spotlight at a time when Iraq is trying to rebuild itself following its 23 U.S. invasion and the eradication of Daesh terrorists from the Arab country. The boosting of economic relations between Tehran and Baghdad not only will bring these two nations closer to each other, it would also help Iraq stand on its own feet after the U.S.-led war and occupation. This will also preserve the sovereignty of Iraq, given that the country has managed to be among those who have exempted themselves from the U.S. sanction measures on the Islamic Republic by continuing its trade with Tehran. After all, Iran plays a great role in developing the Iraqi infrastructure, and the presence of the Iraqi high-level delegation in Tehran can be an indication of that. In a broader perspective, Iraq has been hosting 5 rounds of negotiations between Iran and Saudi Arabia, and along with China, has facilitated the recent rapprochement between Tehran and Riyadh. That is something that would undeniably contribute to security and stability in the region. At an international level, it's not hidden to anyone that the West, namely the United States and its allies, have for decades been sowing discord and division among nations in the West Asia region to fulfill their own political and economic interests. Maybe that's exactly why these West Asian nations have come to an understanding that they should form a coalition and stand in the face of the West and its agenda, which merely aims to divide and conquer.
Iran's English-language news channel, Press TV, has been targeted again. The two organizations, the Anti-Defamation League, the ADL, and the Center for Countering Digital Hate, or CCDH. Their accusation, in their words, Iranian state TV using social media to evade broadcast bans and spread anti-Semitic hate campaigns. That's according to their website. This is a new report that it compiled as proof that Iran's Press TV is guilty of spreading anti-Semitic hate campaigns. And this is the report. It begins with the accusation, which includes this icon, State Hate, how Iran's Press TV uses social media to promote anti-Jewish hatred. It elaborates on this and says that Press TV is a platform used to promote the Iranian state's hateful views of Jewish people, amongst other accusations. So is Press TV guilty of that? Well, for starters, if reporting on the deaths and violations of Palestinians is a crime, yes, it is. Press TV doesn't need to work that hard to cover Israeli atrocities. The Israeli regime does a good job of that, beating Palestinians, killing them, and evicting them from their homes, almost on a daily basis. Furthermore, the current fascist ministers openly threaten Palestinians, like Itamar Ben-Gvir, who has called for the execution of Palestinians who act against Israel, or the Israeli finance minister, Bezalel Smotrich, who has called for Palestinians to be wiped out. These are genocidal calls, but the Israeli media or organizations like the ADL do not cover this. However, looking deeper into this, it becomes clear that the driving force behind this attack on Press TV are these two men, Chris Williamson and David Miller. But who are they, and why are they being targeted? ADL's attack on Press TV became clear on why it had accused it of anti-Semitism. It had targeted Chris Williamson and David Miller because of their role in the program Palestine Declassified, as stated here. In terms of the program itself, it sheds light on Israeli atrocities against Palestinians.
But academic studies have found a long-standing pro-Israel bias within the UK's broadcast media.
They're trying to do some propaganda here to bully the BBC, which has been very, very effective.
It's because they are never properly challenged.
As if that is not alarming for the Israeli regime, the host and producer both have a rich bio when it comes to their views on Palestinians. Christopher Williamson is a British politician who was a member of Parliament for Derby North from 2010 to 2015 and again from 2017 to 2019. He's been associated with many British politicians like Jeremy Corbyn. And because of this, he has also been targeted for his role as a British MP, where he was stripped of his parliamentary pass.
Yeah, well, the first I heard about it was when I was contacted by a British newspaper called The Daily Mail. It's an absurd proposition. I mean, because people may have objections to the Iranian government.
For ADL, having a former British MP hosting a TV program for Iran's Press TV exposing Israeli atrocities is just too much to bear. Then comes David Miller, former professor at Bristol University, producer and co-host of Press TV's Palestine Declassified. He was fired from the university since he said Israel is a violent, racist, foreign regime engaged in ethnic cleansing.
Because there's a huge amount of documentation going along with the case, and that's where we will find whether the university has wrongfully dismissed me, and also whether the court will determine that I was discriminated against on grounds of my political beliefs, which is the claim that we're making.
Press TV is proud to defend the rights of Palestinians and oppressed people anywhere in the world. It has done so through its inception 17 years ago, and the station has been successful in reaching the voice of the oppressed people of Palestine to the world. Even ADL admits the incredible reach of Press TV, that although it was banned from TV and YouTube, it continues to reach up to 11.5 million followers. While Press TV enjoys this high exposure, ADL's post on Twitter had a measly 26,400 views with only 78 likes. So at the end, we ask, who is winning the social media war?
Could the turmoil in Israel prove to be terminal for the Zionist entity?
For weeks, there have been a lot of talk about Ukraine's much-discussed counter-offensive against Russia. U.S. sources say Ukraine is preparing to launch a counter-offensive against Russian forces as early as next month. But it appears that Ukraine's planned military assault, originally announced for November 2022, has been postponed indefinitely. The administration of U.S. President Joe Biden is quietly preparing for the possibility that Ukraine's spring counteroffensive would fall short of expectations. The counteroffensive will attempt to retake territory, most likely in the east and south. Publicly, President Joe Biden's team has offered unwavering support for Ukraine. Pentagon documents allegedly leaked by Airman Jack Teixeira revealed that the U.S. doesn't believe Ukraine can regain any significant territory in its counteroffensive. More current assessments also don't expect much Ukrainian success. The Biden administration officials have reportedly said they don't think Kiev has the ability to sever Russia's land bridge to Crimea in the Kherson and Zaporizhia oblasts. U.S. intelligence says that Ukraine simply does not have the ability to push Russian troops from where they were deeply entrenched. Now, the administration is expected to face criticism from hawks who believe Biden hasn't given Ukraine enough weapons, as well as those who have been calling for the U.S. to push for diplomacy. Without a decisive victory, Western support for Ukraine could weaken and Kiev could come under increasing pressure to enter serious negotiations to end or freeze the conflict.
While every hour on the battlefield counts, the delay in supplying long-range missiles to Ukraine is already significant. This does not allow us to roll back the positions of Russian terrorists, in particular from Kherson, Zaporizhia, and our other cities, which are constantly shelled by Russian long-range missiles.
American and NATO allies have supplied Ukraine with extensive artillery and ammunition for the upcoming battle. But Ukraine has no guarantees of success with a counteroffensive against Russia, despite receiving Western weapons, training and intelligence support.
Yes, still there is some disagreement, but I'm sure everybody will understand that we are in a situation of extreme urgency. I'm sure that in the following days we will reach... While we look for this legal agreement, don't believe that we are just sitting and waiting. The whole work is going on. The whole work is going on. So, and once the legal agreement will be reached, the practical work will be finished.
According to reports, a large portion of the combat-ready, equipped and motivated cadre units of the Ukrainian forces have already been destroyed. U.S. military officials have said Western countries had managed to prepare 9 armored brigades, but experts have questioned this figure since over 830 tanks would be needed for that size of a deployment. Some experts say no more than 3 or 4 Ukrainian brigades could realistically be trained and armed by NATO and the U.S.
I said in Kyiv yesterday that Ukraine's future is in the Euro-Atlantic family, and all NATO allies have agreed that Ukraine will become a NATO member. But the main focus now is, of course, on how to ensure that Ukraine prevails.
Ukrainian officials have said their goal is to break through dug-in Russian defenses and create a widespread collapse in Russia's army. But American officials have assessed that it's unlikely the offensive will result in a dramatic shift in momentum in Ukraine's favor. Since the war began last year, the United States has discouraged peace talks and recently came out against the idea of a ceasefire in Ukraine. But now there is a discussion amongst administration officials about convincing Ukraine to accept more modest goals and agree to a temporary ceasefire. A top-secret assessment from early February stated that Ukraine would fall well short of its counteroffensive goals. More current American assessments are that Ukraine may make some progress in the south and east, but won't be able to repeat last year's success. Kyiv has ruled out negotiations with Moscow until it recaptures all the territories. But even with all Western help, big gains are not guaranteed or even necessarily likely.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع. ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
I would like to take this opportunity to talk about one dimension of the personality of Amir al-Mu'mineen.
السلام عليك يا أمين الله في أرض.
Peace be upon you, O trusted guardian, appointed by Allah.
The universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother.
Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being. A brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time. And in today's world, overcome by evil and darkness, and oppression and slavery, and tyranny and falsehood, a quick look into this beacon of truth and justice, a look into the universal persona of Imam Ali, is greatly useful for making and changing our lives, our families, our societies, and our world into the beautiful world that Allah has planned for humanity.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام إذا هبت أمرا فقع فيه فإن شدة توقيه أعظم مما تخاف منه.
Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salam said, "When you are afraid of something, dive straight into it, because the intensity of abstaining from it is greater than what you are afraid of."
Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio, the program's To My Brother, and we are discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. So, dear friends, we are, of course, talking about the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam, and we have been talking about the universal persona of His Eminence, the first divinely appointed Imam, in many, many programs, of course, by the grace and blessings of the Almighty Allah. Now, we have talked about the bravery and the chivalry and the modesty and the honor and the nobility, the generosity, the altruism, the helping of the weak and the poor and the orphans and the widows, and these various different beautiful traits and characteristics and attributes of the first divinely appointed Imam, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. Now, we find that for some reason in history, different eras witnessed this kind of subduing of the personality of Imam Ali alayhi salam. So, for example, either historians or even historical figures tried to hide the true face and the true reality and the true universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. And so it seems like the Almighty Allah knew of these occurrences, and so via the words of the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam, we find that the importance and the value and the uniqueness of the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam is consistently and constantly spoken of. In one such instance, we find that talking about the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam, the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him, says, "What I say comes from my Lord, who has given me this mission, and I convey it. Jibra'il, the Messenger of Allah, says to me, 'Happy is one who loves Ali both during his life and after his passing away.'" Now, dear friends, again, we have in many of our programs spoken about how the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him, who speaks from wahi, he speaks from divine revelation, as he says in this tradition as well, that what he says comes from his Lord, the Almighty Allah. Now, the Messenger of Allah, we were saying, has so many times repeated this idea of the importance and the value and this necessity to love Imam Ali alayhi salam. And in this place, in this instance, we find that the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him, says that not only loving Ali during his life, but even after he passes away, that loving
Imam Ali alayhi salam is something of great importance, to the point where prosperity, sa'adat, success, victory, as they're saying here, happiness is with one who loves Imam Ali alayhi salam. And of course, this love is not just merely loving this name of Imam Ali. When you love an individual, you love everything about them, especially if everything about them is good. And so in this situation, all of these good, beautiful, and exalted morals and values and virtues of Imam Ali alayhi salam are definitely something which one must love. And so, like we said, what is it that we are loving? In reality, we are loving this universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam, this persona which is the manifestation of the true teachings and the pure teachings and the original, unadulterated and uncorrupted teachings of pure Muhammadan Islam. And so when we love these values which are manifested in Imam Ali alayhi salam, then we are in reality loving pure Muhammadan Islam, and it is this that guides us towards ultimate prosperity and salvation. A very profound, thought-provoking lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam.
Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, the program To My Brother. This moment, I invite you to listen to the Arabic text of Ziyara Aminullah along with the English translation. Please stay tuned.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. السلام عليك يا أمين الله في أرضه وحجته على عباده السلام عليك يا أمير المؤمنين.
Peace be upon you, O trusted guardian, appointed by Allah to administer His earth and to convince the mankind to accept His plan. Peace be upon you, O Amir al-Mu'mineen. I testify that you made utmost efforts, as it should be, in the cause of Allah, acted upon His book, followed the way of life of His Prophet, blessings of Allah be on him and his children, to the last moment of your life, until Allah invited you to come unto Him, and used His discretion to take you away and sealed your enemy's doom with the blame that the arguments had been made known to one and all through you. O Allah, let me be happy and satisfied with that which Thou considers good for me. Let me agree with that which Thou decides for me. Let me passionately remember Thee and invoke Thee. Let me be in love with Thy pure and sincere friends. Let me be well-liked and respected on the earth and in the heavens. Let me be unruffled and well-composed in the midst of misfortunes. Let me be gratefully thankful in prosperity. Let me be mindful of much and more bounties. Let me ardently desire for the heart-warming meeting with Thee, well-equipped with piety to gain my end on the day of requital. Let me follow into the footsteps of Thy representatives. Let me disassociate myself from the mannerism of Thy enemies. Let me pass my time in this world by praising and glorifying Thee.